Good morning. Bill Brewster for Georgia Pacific. Georgia Pacific adopted the quilted diamond design trademark for one reason and one reason only, as an ornamental indicator of source, in other words, as a trademark. The quilted diamond design was not adopted because putting a design on toilet paper makes it perform better. It is not essential to the use or purpose of bath tissue. It does not positively affect the cost or quality. Georgia Pacific has used the quilted diamond design for almost two decades. When Kimberly-Clark adopted designs likely to cause confusion, they printed it on bath tissue and they put it on packaging even when they weren't using bath tissue with the diamond design. On summary judgment, the district court made errors because functionality is an issue of fact and there are disputed fact issues that precluded summary judgment. The district court got there because it misread Traffix, the Supreme Court decision, and it also confused patent claim construction with the trademark law issue of Central Advance. To start, being referred to or claimed in a patent does not preclude something from serving as a trademark. The Supreme Court said so in Traffix, and this court also said so in ECO. Even if something is referred to and claimed in a patent, it can still serve as a trademark if it's arbitrary, incidental, or ornamental. Supreme Court and this court have said so. When Kimberly-Clark says, as it does repeatedly in its brief, that a trademark illustrated, described, and claimed in a patent is precluded from being a trademark, it is simply wrong. Now we know that it can be a trademark. The question is, how do we assess whether it is or isn't functional? Contrary to the district court's factual finding, the diamond design is not the Central Advance of the Georgia Pacific utility patents. Because the court below decided this on summary judgment, the question is, does any record evidence show that the quilted diamond design is not the functional, not the Central Advance? And the answers are absolutely. To start with, diamonds were not unique. They existed, diamond designs were not unique. They existed long before these patents. The patents are not for a diamond design. In fact, there are in the record design patents for these lattice type designs, including a design patent I'll refer to later on that was owned by Kimberly-Clark. The design itself is not useful. In Jay Franco, this court said that functionality is determined by a feature's usefulness, and a diamond design in and of itself is not useful on toilet paper or otherwise. In addition, there's evidence in the record, ample evidence in the record. Dr. Murray has two declarations. His first declaration was principally around the issue that there are that the lattice design is merely used as an example. It's illustrative. So it's talking about other advances, and here the diamond design is used merely as an example. The second declaration was even more instructive because it broke down Kimberly-Clark's process of developing its product. And Kimberly-Clark explicitly separated the aesthetic part of its development from the functional part of its development. And indeed, that's exactly what we have here. Now, the quilted diamond design is not the Central Advance, and the burden is not on us to say what is, but it's quite clear what is the Central Advance here. To understand it, you have to put it in historic context. First, Georgia Pacific chose to use the quilted diamond design as a trademark. It made that decision. Then it decided to place that trademark on tissue. Then it decided to emboss that trademark on tissue rather than using another technology. And in doing so, it identified complications. And in particular, if you take any repeating design and you go around and you lay it into each other, the issue you're going to face is one of nesting. It's going to sit down inside of the previous design. And the way that you avoid that is that you offset the design, you offset the pattern, and or you use varying embossed depths. And here, what the patents talk about and what they do is that any repeating design needs to be offset with varying embossed depths. There is a key piece of evidence that makes very clear that the Central Advance is not the quilted diamond design. The prosecution history that's quoted on page 10 of the reply brief, and in addition to that, what we used for the comparison and what the prosecution history used for the comparison was a Kimberly-Clark design patent, and the design patent had a lattice design with elements inside of the lattice. And the prosecution history describing these Georgia Pacific Utility patents said the 349 patent, or that Kimberly-Clark design patent, teaches none of the features of the present invention which are responsible for the improvement in tissue product. In other words, the design doesn't contribute to it at all. Rather, it's the offset and varying embossed height. And that is a factual issue within the patents themselves, which should have precluded summary judgment. In addition, within the patent themselves are the language, other shaped cells are readily recognizable to the skilled artisan. In other words, the use of it as an example in the patents does not preclude others, and in fact, a universe from being considered.
Counsel, the patents, the utility patents go beyond that, though, and explain that the use of the diamond latticing, if that's the right terminology, is the preferred embodiment of this invention. So that has some significance, or at least the district court thought it did, and why is that wrong?
The district court thought it did, and it was wrong there and in one other place where it latched on to some patent language, preferred embodiment and best mode, and in both places it reacted like a layperson was. Oh, doesn't that mean it's the best, or doesn't that mean it's preferred to all others? In fact, a preferred embodiment doesn't mean that you've compared it to a universe and it's preferred as composed to others. The preference, and the Federal Circuit has made clear, the preference is the inventor's preference. I prefer that as an example. So if I wanted to give you an example and they had said, my preferred embodiment is an arrow or my preferred embodiment is an eagle, it doesn't say that's better than anything else. It just says I prefer it. Here it's no surprise why they used that as their preferred embodiment, because a trademark application had already been filed. The first item on the timeline here is a trademark application in 1991. So when the court says preferred embodiment means something, in fact, it's precisely wrong. It's wrong under patent law, and it's wrong otherwise. So this court hasn't addressed that particular question because it doesn't get many patent cases. But there's a district court decision from Northern District of Illinois in ZipDi, where it went through an analysis of whether it mattered that something was described as the preferred embodiment, and it got down to it and said, no, it doesn't. And in addition, the Federal Circuit is not. It said it's only just a preference. So the district court fell into the trap of, if it says preferred, doesn't that mean better? And if it means best mode, doesn't that mean the best? And neither of those is true. There isn't any reason it's better. In fact, that's the question that Kimberly-Clark hasn't answered in this case. Why is it that a diamond-designed lattice would be better than any other design used here? Isn't it just one of a myriad of designs which the Rogers and King case, this court said, those designs are essentially unlimited? The answer to this question of saying if it's preferred, is that something that is evidence? It may be evidence. Is it best mode? That's evidence. Is it claimed in the patent? That's evidence. But at this stage of the case, it was not the district court's job to weigh the evidence, because it certainly wasn't the only evidence. This court said in Thomas and Betts, when it was talking about the same kind of situation, that whether or not it was something which was incidental or not necessitated a weighing of evidence. So if there was evidence that it's not the central advance, in fact, that case came before traffics, but it used the same word, incidental. If the question is it incidental or not, that requires a weighing of evidence. So whether it says preferred or best mode or is claimed, it's still a factual issue.
What evidence, different from what we already have in the record, would be presented at a trial?
Your Honor, I think to start with, we would start with the evidence in the record. So there are facts which demonstrate that it is not the central advance. So we would start with Murray and Miller, and they would be assessed as to whether or not they are correct when they say that these are mere exemplars and illustrations and any design could be used. So you'd start with those, and you would have whatever competing evidence there was aligned with that. In addition, you would have you'd start with using the alternative designs to prove that was the case. There are a myriad of alternative designs, and you'd take all the designs, and you'd have a technical person, and you'd say, what's the advantage to this over that? This, this, this. And the answer would be none, in fact, and the evidence would come to show that. In addition, there would be evidence as to how the central advance isn't that, but is, and how this product developed. So there'd be a myriad of evidence that would be weighed. We'll take the next piece, which would be a jury here, would consider a design patent and the copyright and Kimberly-Clark's design patent. So Georgia Pacific obtained a design patent on the quilted diamond design, which can only be granted and issued if it's ornamental. The same is true of a copyright registration. We obtained both. The Sixth Circuit, faced with precisely this situation, the grant of a trademark registration, a design patent, and a utility patent, the Sixth Circuit has addressed this directly and said that because the design patent is evidence of ornamentality, you can't grant summary judgment based on the utility patent. That's the first step, and here it goes further. Kimberly-Clark also obtained a design patent, and it obtained a design patent for a very similar design. The jury would be entitled to say, Kimberly-Clark has told us that is ornamental, and we're going to believe them. And they also would be able to say, further, that's an admission which we're not allowing them to turn back on. So, in fact, it would be some other evidence that they would have to weigh. So there's the evidence of the fact and expert witnesses, there's a discussion of the alternatives and the elements in there, and then there's other evidence as well. All of this requires weighing. It's not, we're not describing that we win the case because of it. We're saying a jury ought to be entitled to weigh it here rather than have it decided at some point.
Under traffics, the utility patents would be entitled to greater evidentiary weight, you think?
Yes, but let's say about what they would be entitled to and they wouldn't be entitled to under traffics. Traffics says that a utility patent, if what's identified is the central advance, that it can be strong evidence. So if it's the central advance, it's strong evidence. If it's not the central advance, it isn't strong evidence. But there's one further element that the district court got wrong that traffics didn't say. Because what traffics went on to say was that it's strong evidence, and then I'm quoting traffics, which, quote, adds great weight to the statutory presumption of functionality. But the reason that statutory presumption of functionality existed in traffics is that the dual spring device was completely unregistered. There was no trademark registration. So in traffics, it was strong evidence, and together with a statutory presumption created a heavy burden. Here, in this case, because we own, Georgia Pacific owns incontestable registrations, it is strong evidence, but it still has to be weighed and doesn't create the heavy burden.
There were incontestable registrations in Franek, were there not?
Correct. In Franek and ECO, both of those discussed incontestable registrations.
Right, and this court applied that strong evidence presumption?
It applied it with literally no discussion, Your Honor, meaning it's not clear the issue was raised. What we're saying here is that, in fact, that's an error because the law is clear that there's a 43A3 is the part of the Lanham Act which says an unregistered trademark, the burden of proof's on the plaintiff. So there was a statutory presumption in case and traffics. The Seventh Circuit in Jay Franco and ECO don't mention that statutory presumption, which they should have, Your Honor. But it goes on to say not only do we own a registration, but one that's incontestable. And if you take a look at the Lanham Act, the section on incontestability and defenses, the issue is functionality is an affirmative defense. And in the case of a registration, that ought not be converted into something where the burden of proof is on us.
What does the Federal Circuit say about that issue?
What does the Federal Circuit say about?
Is Franek right or wrong, according to the, or haven't they said?
They haven't addressed, the Federal Circuit has not addressed that issue in a trade dress case. What's the central advance? That issue has not been addressed.
Any other circuit disagree with us on that?
The closest that it's come is the weighing of evidence, which this court said in Thomas and Betts, but otherwise there's not a decision that takes that on directly. The closest would be an instructive case which talked about the fact that if a mark is generic, that burden remains on the defendant the entire time. And because that's in the same section 33B, That would be analogous to the other affirmative defenses are there. So all the other affirmative defenses it weighs in that direction. I'll reserve that short time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Animal.
May it please the court. My name is Jeff Handelman, representing Kimberly-Clark. This court recently, within the past year, as a matter of fact, had occasion to address the issue of functionality and useful designs in the companion cases of Franek and specialized seating. And as this court held in Franek, a design that produces a benefit other than source identification is functional. Now, here, the asserted designs provide numerous utilitarian benefits for bath tissue, including improved roll structure of the tissue, better bulk for the tissue, improved softness, and then the avoidance of ridging and nesting. We know this because that's what Georgia-Pacific told the Patent and Trademark Office in securing its utility patents and also in its advertising materials.
Well, what it said was that the technique of latticed embossment and with a variety of polygonal shapes, apparently, with embossed flowers and hearts, etc., would serve all of the functions that you've just articulated, not necessarily that only the diamond one will do, as I read those patents.
And what Traffics holds very clearly is that if a utility patent is strong evidence of functionality, if the features claimed in the patent utility patent is strong evidence that the features claimed in the patent are functional, and those features are covered by the claims of the utility patents. Not only are they covered by the claims of the utility patents, but they're illustrated in the patents, and the patents identify the quilted diamond design as the preferred embodiment of the claimed invention, or the most preferred embodiment of the claimed invention. And a brief word on preferred embodiment, because I believe Georgia-Pacific has mischaracterized our position. We're not arguing that the preferred embodiment somehow limits the scope of the claims or defines the outer limits of the claimed invention. Rather, the point is that the preferred embodiment lies right at the heart of what's been claimed, and whatever else the claims may cover, octagons, for example, they most definitely cover the preferred embodiment. And if you go to the patents, for example, the 776 patent says that figure 1 illustrates the preferred emboss according to the present invention. Figure 1 in the patent drawing is the same design that's pictured in the trademark registration. So we have the same design covered by the claims and identified as a preferred embodiment of the patent. Now, that leads to the question of, is it incidental? Because that's what Georgia-Pacific's response is. And in assessing this question, Traffics is very clear. You look beyond the claims to assess whether the feature, and I'm quoting Traffics now, is shown as a useful part of the invention or serves a purpose within the terms of the utility patent. And as we've seen here, the designs serve key utilitarian purposes within the terms of the patent, improving the quality and the performance of the product. Even one of the patent titles highlights this, high softness embossed tissue with nesting prevention embossed pattern. Now, one point about the legal test, because Traffics and then Franek and specialized seating following Traffics make it very clear that a party cannot, on the one hand, secure a utility patent by saying its design is useful, and then on the other hand, turn around and assert that the design is purely ornamental and therefore should serve as a trademark. Now, to get around this authority, Georgia-Pacific is proposing a new test for functionality that isn't based on Traffics, nor is it adopted by Franek or specialized seating. According to Georgia-Pacific, a utility patent is strong evidence of functionality only if the design is the central advance of the patent And Georgia-Pacific now argues for the first time in its reply brief the design has to be novel. Now, this novelty argument, number one, we maintain has been waived because it was raised for the first time in the reply brief. It's not discussed in the opening brief. But even if not waived, the argument misstates the test. As this court held in Franek, functionality is determined by a feature's usefulness, not its patentability. Now, the words central advance are extracted out of Traffics, where the court was describing the dual spring design patent that was at issue in that case, but it wasn't set forth as the legal test. This court has been very clear about the legal test. Again, quoting Franek, utility patents serve as excellent cheat sheets because any design claimed in a patent is supposed to be useful, not novel, useful. And for this reason, this court held, Traffics held that expired utility patents provide strong evidence that the features therein claimed are functional. Franek and specialized seating make no mention of central advance or novelty in discussing the test for functionality. There's no support in Traffics or in this court's companion decisions for Georgia Pacific's purported test. It also runs counter to policy. Keep in mind, the key purpose of functionality is to prevent one from gaining a perpetual monopoly over useful designs, whether or not those designs are novel. And many patents, as the Supreme Court has observed, consists of combinations of features in the prior art. The combination may be novel, but the individual features are not. And if a feature is useful under Traffics and Franek, it is not eligible for trademark protection. Now, a brief word about the claims. This case closely parallels Franek. Like here, Franek involved a summary judgment based on functionality as a matter of law. Like here, Franek involved an incontestable registered mark. And like here, Franek involved a patent that had dependent and independent claims. Close parallels. Now, the patent at issue in Franek covered a towel that converts into a bag. It was a towel with a drawstring around it that you could pull to create a bag for ease of transport. Claim one in Franek, in the patent, covered the towel bag construction as described with numerous elements. Claim two, the dependent claim, recited a towel bag construction as set forth in claim one, wherein said towel is circular in shape. And that circular shape is what matched the trademark design. Now, the independent claims here cover a sheet of tissue having polygonal cells that make up the lattice pattern containing signature bosses that are located inside the cells. The dependent claims, taking, for example, Claim 9 of the 776 patent, recites the sheet according to Claim 1 wherein said polygonal cells are diamond-shaped cells. Now, each claim in a patent must be substantially different from the other claims, and as the court held in Franek, we must presume that the unique component in Claim 2, the round shape of the towel, is useful because it was specifically claimed in the dependent claim. Likewise, here, the diamond-shaped cells are specifically claimed in the dependent claim, and so under Franek, must be presumed to be useful.
I want to just ask a couple of dumb questions because you're the experts here. Personally, I can't think of anything that I use every day and give little thought to as toilet paper. My understanding is that Northern is suing Kimberly because consumers will be confused about the origin of the product. And that's basically what this gets down to, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, is there any study that tells us how many people who use Northern Tissue always buy Northern, or most people just walk through a store and just, oh, we need six rolls of toilet paper, so they throw them in the cart. I mean, I don't know that. So, tell me, what does the evidence show, or what happens?
Well, Your Honor, in the procedural posture of this case, Georgia Pacific filed a motion for a preliminary injunction shortly after concurrently with the complaint. and they asked for a preliminary injunction preventing Kimberly-Clark from using the embossed designs at issue. Now, in responding to the preliminary injunction, we argued two main things. Number one, we argued that because the designs are claimed in Georgia-Pacific's utility patents, they're functional, and functional designs are not eligible for trademark protection in the first place.
I'll put all that legalese aside. You know, tell me what is there in I haven't looked closely at bathroom tissue until 10 days ago when I looked at the briefs in this case. But what is there that would confuse somebody in thinking that Cottonelle or Kimberly-Clark's products are really coming from Georgia-Pacific's?
Well, that gets to the second issue. The second issue we argued is that even if these designs were valid trademarks, there's no likelihood of confusion. And we did. Kimberly-Clark did submit a consumer survey addressing that issue. And what the design of the study was, first of all, you qualify the respondent. Are you the main purchaser of bathroom tissue for your household? Yes, so you have the relevant universe. Then you show the respondent the Kimberly-Clark product out of the package. So there's no Cottonelle brand name to identify. And you say, who puts out this product? And can you identify any other brands that are put out by the same company? Now, if you showed the respondent the Kimberly-Clark design and the respondents came back and said, oh, that's put out by Northern, that might be evidence of confusion, assuming that the survey was correctly designed and administrated. Now, in our case, the consumer survey results came back. And by the way, you also have a control. You show a non-infringing design and ask the same questions. And then you compare the level of confusion of the test product, the accused Kimberly-Clark design. What's the level of confusion there with the level of confusion of the control product? You subtract out the control or the noise. And my recollection is that there was essentially zero confusion once the control was subtracted out from the Kimberly-Clark design. The consumers were not mistaken in attributing the Kimberly-Clark product as a Northern product or as put out by Northern or Georgia-Pacific. So there is a way to conduct a consumer study. You show the allegedly infringing product. You ask, who puts it out? If they say the plaintiff, that can be evidence of confusion. In our case, the results were to the contrary. So that was sort of what happened early on in the case. Now, once we presented our evidence of functionality, which is the threshold issue, is this design even eligible for trademark protection, Georgia-Pacific withdrew the preliminary injunction motion. So Judge Kendall never had to rule on the preliminary injunction motion, Georgia-Pacific having withdrawn the motion after briefing, in light of the evidence of functionality that was presented in response to the motion. Now, in this case, the evidence of functionality is compelling. We have the asserted designs covered by the claims in Georgia-Pacific's own patents. By the way, Franek was a third-party patent that this court had to compare with the trademark design. These are Georgia-Pacific's own patents, no comparison necessary. The diamond-shaped cells are specifically claimed in the dependent claims, same thing that happened in Franek. The asserted designs are identified as the preferred embodiments. That means whatever else may be claimed, these lie at the heart of the claims, which brings this case squarely within Traffic's.
You put in evidence of their advertising campaigns.
And their advertising campaign bolsters the evidence of functionality because the ads create a nexus between the quilted diamond design and the functional benefits of the product. Another factor that this court recognized in both specialized seating and Franek as supporting a finding of functionality.
Is that both television ads and print ads?
The evidence in the record consists of print ads, including claims on the product packaging. So you've got these claims being disseminated throughout the marketplace on store shelves. And importantly, these designs are not merely incidental. If you go to the disclosures, not only in the advertising but in the patents, what you see is the perceived softness, key benefit of embossed tissue can be increased greatly while avoiding nesting when a particular pattern, the trademark design, is embossed onto the tissue. Again, that's JA page 96, the abstract of the 639 patent and the 156 patent at JA 143. Another quick example. An embossed tissue having improved bulk, another key functional advantage, and puffiness while being non-nesting, another utilitarian benefit, by having a lattice pattern and at least two signature bosses. And as we've seen, this is the most preferred embodiment. And finally, one last example. This invention relates to the discovery that perceived softness of the embossed tissue can be increased greatly while avoiding nesting problems if a particular pattern is embossed into the tissue. The particular pattern matters. And
The problem here, and what makes this case more complicated than Franek, is that the particular pattern of the lattice work on the embossing can be a variety of geometric shapes according to the utility patents, although the diamond shape is preferred.
That is
so
true.
You know, that it's a harder case than Franek in that sense.
Well, the patents do say, for example, the polygonal cells could take other shapes such as octagons or hexagons. But this court in specialized seating made it very clear that the fact that there may be other designs that work does not negate the functionality of this design, particularly when this design is identified as the preferred embodiment of the claimed invention. In specialized seating, for example, this court made it very clear that the fact that the claims may be sufficiently broad to cover other designs, or the fact that other designs of the folding chair at issue there may work, didn't negate the functionality of the trademark design. And I'm quoting, "We do not doubt there are many other available functional designs." And again, in specialized seating, this may be one of many solutions, but that doesn't diminish the functionality of here the lattice design that's covered by the trademark registrations and that's pictured and claimed in the utility patents. And again, the rationale is to avoid the perpetual monopoly of a useful design where one party, on the one hand, argues that it's useful to secure a utility patent, and then on the other hand, turns to the trademark office and claims, oh, no, it's merely ornamental and should serve as a trademark. This court made it clear that you can't have it both ways.
Thank you, Mr. Hanlon.
Thank you for the court's time.
And Mr. Brewster, I think your time was up, but we've given your opponent some additional time, so I'll give you 3 minutes.
Your Honor, thank you very much. Trying to take on directly the questions that the court has asked.
Yeah, would you respond to this advertising?
I will, Your Honor. I'll start with advertising.
I raise it because last night, as I was getting ready, there was a minute ad for Northern Quilted and Functionality Matters with regard to
it. The advertising in the record, Your Honor, is that there's been $200 million of advertising in its history. The ads that the district court extracted that Kimberly-Clark had cited were three ads from the 1990s. So to weigh against that is the essentially $200 million. There's no evidence in the record about how extensive that was or how much was used.
Last night's ad certainly isn't in the record, but I would suggest maybe you could take a look at it.
Well, we will, Your Honor. But the ads in question say that are in the record is that, it, for instance, it says quilted to absorb. And then it doesn't show the design. It shows a side view of the tissue. It shows that emboss works. And this really gets to the question that Judge Sykes had. Embossing is functional. Offset is functional. The quilted diamond design is illustrative. It isn't functional in and of itself. And it's not that there are some alternatives like Franek and Specialized. It is there because those are product configuration cases. This case, both Franco and Specialized mention that it would be different if it was not a product configuration, but the design imprinted on either the back of the chair or on the towel. We're not trying to protect circular toilet paper. We're trying to protect something that's printed on it. And that print is illustrative and could have been anything. It's a good fact question about how you would weigh evidence from the 1990s against all the evidence about the quilter's sense and whether embossing is functional versus whether the design is functional. Embossing is clearly functional, but not the quilted diamond design. And that's where, because the ads all say quilted, it doesn't refer to the design at all. The questions that have been raised are all good fact questions that should be addressed and weighed by a jury. The extent of alternatives, the meaning of the design patents, unmentioned here. The Sixth Circuit's already ruled you can't grant summary judgment if there's a design patent that's owned and in place. Sixth Circuit's done that. The Eighth Circuit in Fryhoff said if the element was developed as a trademark, that's evidence which a jury should weigh before it makes the decision about whether it's functional. In both, that's exactly what we have here. And there's ample evidence that it's not the central advance, that it's not the key. The key is referred to in that short excerpt from the prosecution history. I refer you again to page 10 of the reply brief. It's a picture of a Kimberly-Clark design patent. And George Pacific and the Patent and Trademark Office go back and forth, and they finally say, all of the utility here is in something other than the design. So when the question is, should a jury be able to weigh that against what the patent says or what they say the patent says, the answer is yes. Weigh that picture, which is very close to the quilted design, and it says none of the utility comes from that. The jury has to be entitled to weigh that just as they should be entitled to weigh the other evidence. In this case, if you take Franek, well, thank you for the extra time, and I hope I've answered your questions. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we'll proceed.